time.
Talk Live, 855-453, that's the SACL toll-free call-in line, 855-450-3733. Normally, you can call in and talk about anything you want, but normally, we don't have guests on Free Talk Live. It's a pretty rare occurrence.
Normally, you don't have a live show on a Sunday night.
That's true. We probably should let folks know this is the live Sunday edition of Free Talk Live. It's Mark.
And Stephanie.
And you can, you know, call us at 855-450-3733. But in this first hour, we're gonna be talking, at least for a period of time, with Richard Carrier. Now, Richard, I know you're a PhD, and I know you've written a controversial book. So introduce yourself.
Oh, hello. Yes. My name is Dr. Richard Carrier. My background is in history of philosophy and history of science and origins of religion, or the Christian religion. And I've written and published on modern naturalist philosophy and also on ancient history, ancient science, and the origins of Christianity, including the resurrection and the historicity of Jesus and historical method. My latest book, Proving History, takes Bayesian reasoning and shows how that's the new way to examine Jesus studies, and I show how all historical methods reduce to it. And so that's an example of some of the convergence of my historical and philosophical work.
Okay, I have questions right off the bat, because I think most of our listeners probably wouldn't be familiar with what is Bayesian reasoning
and what is historical naturalism.
I don't know what it means. So
okay, that's 100% of the hosts don't know what Bayesian reasoning is.
So could you clarify, please?
Sure. I live kind of a dual life. I work in two different fields, and one of them is dealing with philosophy as a worldview, as trying to determine what is the true nature of the universe, the nature of ourselves, and so on. And so there's, you know, all the traditional philosophical subjects come up. And in that, naturalism is the view that I defend, which is the view that nature is all there is, but that goodness still exists and happiness can still exist. And so
as opposed to supernaturalism.
Exactly. Supernatural Buddhism on the one end, or Christianity or Islam and so on.
Sure, I can get on board with that. Does Richard know our kind of backgrounds and where we're coming from?
Richard's on for an interview.
I guess a little bit, yeah.
Just so you're familiar, Richard, Mark and I have talked a number of times on the show about, nature, like the nature of the universe, religion, and those kind of things. I am an atheist, but I was raised Jewish. So I said when I came into the studio, I am completely a blank slate on this whole topic of whether Jesus existed, because when I was a kid, I was taught essentially nothing about this, and then I became an atheist, and I said, well, what does it matter if Jesus ever existed, because the supernatural stuff isn't true. And Mark, I think, is a little more of a theist than I am.
I'm certainly a theist, but, you know, I'm not your average Christian theist. I was raised Christian, and I reject the logic of the Bible, and so that's where I'm at.
And as I understand, you're a Quaker as well, right?
That's right. I am a Quaker. There are some Quakers are not necessarily you don't have to be a theist to be a Quaker, nor it's just sort of a method of sitting in silence.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, I think the moral platform of Quakerism is actually one of the most admirable among Christian sects. So good on you there.
Most folks feel the same way.
Yeah.
So now you have a controversial book that you've put out here.
That's right. That's right. Which gets me to the other side, my other life, which is my actual PhD that I got from Columbia University was in ancient history, ancient intellectual history, so ancient philosophy, religion, science, and so on. So I also do a lot of work in ancient history. And the two fields together, philosophy and ancient history, have put me involved with historical method. Like, how do historians understand the past? What is the logic behind sound historical reasoning?
Mm-hmm.
So I've been involved with that as well. And then, of course, heavily involved in Jesus studies, you know, combating a Christian apologetics and supernaturalist apologetics and so on. Throughout all of this, I was with you. It didn't really matter whether Jesus existed or not. And I always just assumed that it was a well-established fact that he did. And I thought the idea that he didn't was an absurd sort of conspiracy theory kind of thing. You know, it's like aliens and the pyramids and those kinds of things. So I always dismissed those theories. And I was just, I was just assume that Jesus was an ordinary charismatic preacher. We have lots of examples from anthropology, the whole ethnographic record of people like this who can appear to perform miraculous healings and things like that, but don't really.
Sure.
And then had some great ideas, and then, of course, then myths and legends grew up around him, as they did around so many famous people, you know, Alexander the Great and so on. So this, that seemed like the obvious explanation for the evidence, and it wasn't a threat in any sense to my atheism or my naturalism. It just, it fits right into all the expectations of history. All the other religions have similar stories. Several people really insisted that I needed to look into it further and especially concentrate on Earl Doherty's book, The Jesus Puzzle. And they said, well, you know, most of this Jesus myth stuff is really garbage. It's really terrible argumentation. But this book seems to have a really good scholarly argument. And so I said, okay, I'll look at that. And so I did, and I wrote a review. It was kind of mixed, but it was unexpectedly positive. I realized that he actually had a better argument than most people were giving credit. Now, it's still true that a lot of arguments for the Jesus myth are bad. Even arguments that aren't terrible are nevertheless, I think, unconvincing. But if you once you sweep away all of the garbage arguments, all the conspiracy theories and all the quack arguments, and then even all of the sincere arguments that are unconvincing, once you get all of that away, there's still a few arguments left that are compelling.
I love this position, yeah. Richard. The position that you've laid out here for yourself, and it is unenviable, is I agree with the quacks. But I'll tell you why they're quacks. Go ahead.
Oh, yes, right. It's a strange thing. But it was unexpected to me. I didn't expect to find this. And so,
well, hey, I would say that's the mark of a true scientist, is like when you come to a conclusion based on what you believe is solid reasoning and evidence that, you know, is a certain conclusion, even if it's unpopular, even if you didn't expect to find that, you have to accept it because the way that you achieved that conclusion was valid, right?
I fully agree. No one else notices this, but anyway.
Well, I don't know that one can even put this into the realm of science. This is studying
history. Sure,
it's a
science. Philosophy is a science.
Yeah, but you can't prove the existence of anyone with philosophy, including George Washington.
Yeah.
So
this is history. History is a member of the sciences. History, I often describe philosophy as science with little data, right? Philosophy is science with not enough data. But history is the same thing, except history, you're not talking about grand questions about the nature of existence. History, you're just trying to figure out what happened, right? What existed, when did it exist, you know, figuring out what happened in the past. But history, the methodology of history is very much like science. And in fact, in my book, Proving History, I lay out in many details why and where the parallels are and how it is actually a science. The main difference is that we just have abysmal data. The amount of data we have is much less than we have in the other sciences, especially for ancient history. And especially, even most of all, for the origins of Christianity. We have some of the worst documentation that you could possibly expect for the origin of a religion, so it's really, really hard to determine what actually happened. We're doing kind of like looking at clues and trying to figure out what the most likely explanation is of the little amount of evidence that did survive. And so I think, to an extent, in history, you can't be as certain as you are in science. And even in science, you're not absolutely certain. Things can change with new information. But in history, you have to leave a lot more room for, well, I could be wrong, but this is what seems to be most likely the case. And you can say that in different degrees depending on how much evidence you have.
Mm-hmm. So now your claim here is that Jesus never existed, right?
I think that's more likely than not, but that we can't say for sure.
Okay. So what is the most compelling of you've written a book, and then you're writing a second book on the subject. What's the most compelling reason to you that you believe Jesus didn't exist?
There isn't really a single piece of evidence that says, oh, you know, that's a smoking gun that convinces me. It's the congruence of several pieces of evidence. One of them is the fact that the letters of Paul are extremely strange, the authentic letters. You have to realize that about half the letters are forgeries,
okay.
And even mainstream scholars agree with that fact. In fact, Bart Ehrman wrote a book called Forged, which is a really good book that'll set you straight on where the mainstream consensus is on this question. But only about half the letters are authentic. But when you look at those authentic letters, they're very odd.
I want to hear how they're odd.
Yeah, I mean, this is...
This is very interesting.
So Paul, I mean, you know, the one thing that we can say about Paul is he wrote at least some of the books that were out there, and he's contemporary with Jesus. This should be very interesting. Richard, please hold the line.
Yeah, you bet. 855-450-3733
if you've got questions for Richard Carrier who claims Jesus didn't exist. Call in, 855-450-FREE, Free Talk Live.
My name is Jennifer. I'm 44, and I lost weight with the Amberin program.
My name is Kim. I'm 47, and I lost weight with the Amberin program.
I'm Jane. I'm 52, and I lost a ton of weight with the Amberin program. Even my belly fat is gone, and it was so easy.
Thousands of women over 40 who used to struggle with weight gain are having incredible success with the Amberin program. That's because Amberin focuses on hormonal balance. The leading cause of weight gain in women over 40, especially during menopause, is hormonal imbalance. Until you balance your hormones, losing weight can be practically impossible. But the Amberin program balances your hormones naturally, making losing weight surprisingly easy. Plus, Amberin eliminates other symptoms of unbalanced hormones, like hot flashes, irritability, and sleeplessness. Call in the next 15 minutes to receive a complimentary risk-free trial with a 30-day supply free. Call 1-800-525-2563. That's 1-800-525-2563. 1-800-525-2563.
On the average, Americans work between 45 to 50 years, hoping to build up enough wealth to retire and live out their golden years. Unfortunately, with taxation, the rising cost of food, energy, housing, and medical, many retirees are forced to live below the poverty line. Is this a flaw for enterprise, or is our monetary unit we call the Federal Reserve Note forcing us into perpetual debt, ensuring inflation and higher taxes? These questions and more can be answered by reading G. Edward Griffin's book, The Creature from Jekyll Island. Congressman Ron Paul states, it's what every American needs to know about central bank power. A gripping adventure into the secret world of international banking cartel. Hi, this is Ted Anderson. I will give a silver dollar from the early 1900s to anyone who purchases this book. Call 1-800-686-2237 and order a copy today. It's critical that the public be made aware of the system. Call and order your copy today at 1-800-686-2237. That's 1-800-686-2237.
American gardeners and fellow patriots, make the right choice with your money, time, and your family food supply. Choose 100% pure heirloom seeds in the Survival Seed Vault from MyPatriotSupply.com. Why spend more? The Survival Seed Vault from MyPatriotSupply.com is only $37.95 and includes 20 varieties of pure, hardy, easy-to-grow heirloom seeds. Yes, only $37.95. That's 70% less than our competitors. You could buy three Survival Seed Vaults for less than one of theirs. The Survival Seed Vault from MyPatriotSupply.com includes detailed planting and seed saving instructions and ships same day. Plus, all orders over $49 ship free. MyPatriotSupply.com is American owned by patriots like you, passionate about freedom and preparedness. Call now, 866-229-0927. That's 866-229-0927. Or discover more emergency preparedness items when you order at MyPatriotSupply.com. Choose the original. Choose the Survival Seed Vault at MyPatriotSupply.com.
Positive results from satisfied customers of Heart and Body Extract continue to pour into our website, hbextract.com.
This is Al from New Jersey. One day I saw your ad for Heart and Body Extract, and it mentioned that it would help me with angina, so I decided to order. I figure I had nothing to lose.
Heart and Body Extract supplies your body with everything it needs to balance itself and maintain optimal heart and circulatory health with no negative side effects.
I took the formula three times a day as directed, and I kid you not, within 4 days, my angina pain was completely gone.
Order HB Extract by calling 866-295-5305 or online at hbextract.com. That's 866-295-5305 or hbextract.com.
I could not believe it actually stopped the pain. Heart and Body Extract actually works. This is just an amazing product. Even the numbness in my hands is completely gone.
Heart and Body Extract for a long and healthy life.
Now, more Free Talk Live. Dial in at 1-855-450-FREE. That's 1-855-450-FREE.
Talk Live, 855-453. That is the SACL toll-free call-in line, and normally you can call in and talk about anything you want, and certainly we'll be doing that later in the show, but right now we've got Richard Carrier on the line. We're doing an interview with him, and it's his claim that you know, as a PhD historian type fella, that Jesus never existed. And it's a bold claim. I mean, I think Time Magazine called Jesus the man of the millennia or something like that. And it's interesting. He's so pervasive in Western culture that the idea that this person never may never have existed.
Yeah, that brings up the question of, does it really matter whether he existed? Because so many people have latched onto these ideas about Jesus, and it's like, at this point, he definitely exists in people's minds, at least, and he influences, the idea of Jesus influences a lot of things about culture, you know, so, I don't know, that question just sort of came up for me, Mark, as you were talking.
Yeah, well, indeed. Richard, go ahead.
The historical Jesus, most people are really not even interested in the actual historical Jesus. This is something that mainstream scholars have been annoyed with for a while, is when you start peeling away the myths and legends, even the mainstream scholars who try to discover the historical Jesus end up with a Jesus that doesn't fit what anyone wants Jesus to have been. So the people who are really big on Jesus existing, who really need Jesus to have existed, are the people least interested in what these mainstream scholars are discovering or arguing the historical Jesus is like.
Yeah, that doesn't surprise me.
And now I want to hear
you
had given that you're going to give us the what you could consider the most compelling evidence or confluence of evidence as you talked about it. But you know, it's interesting. From this time, there were many different gods sort of circling around out there, and I don't think anybody really believed any of these people existed. I don't think. You know, they didn't believe that Zeus walked the earth. They didn't think that Sol Invictus had lunch down here. They
really?
Didn't...
You think people
didn't? You'd be surprised, actually. You'd be surprised.
Okay.
There were a variety of different views about the gods in the ancient world. And in fact, the masses, the vast majority of people in the time, people who would be the least educated, were often very much in the camp of believing that these gods really existed in some form or other, and that some of them had even visited the earth.
I was thinking, if you can get people in 2012 to believe that their whatever imaginary friend that they choose exists, that Jesus really existed, then I would be willing to bet that people in the ancient world really sincerely believed that these things existed.
So let's get back to the history here, Richard. What is the most compelling evidence? You'd said that there's some confluence of evidence that I'm interested in. What is that compelling evidence?
Of course, I have to point out in going in that I can summarize it, but of course you realize that any scholar or defender of historicity will like take issue with every single one. And to me, the interesting thing is what happens at the end of that debate, which is a really long debate, which is why I'm writing books on it, to sort of sort it out. But to just give you the sort of opening volley, the sort of idea that the first thing is that the letters, the authentic letters of Paul, are strange in the sense that they only seem to know and speak about a cosmic Jesus. His Jesus only exists in heaven and is only known. His sayings and information about him are only known through revelations and scripture.
So before you go on, Paul doesn't say Jesus of Nazareth. Right?
Yeah.
He doesn't say Jesus was at the well with the woman, the Samaritan woman. He doesn't say...
He never talks about his ministry at all.
This is important for people because, when Christians, I was raised Christian, strongly Christian, and when you read the Bible as this sort of compendium, this whole book, and so you get the evidence that, the stories about Jesus existing on earth, and then you read Paul's stuff, but you never really parse each little piece. Mm-hmm. And apparently, and I haven't gone back and read because I just don't care that much anymore, but apparently Paul never stated that Jesus existed on the planet.
He never makes that a clear statement. He never talks about the ministry of Jesus, never talks about anything Jesus did, never talks about Pontius Pilate or any of that stuff. And the only sources of information he ever mentions, not only him having, but anyone having, he doesn't mention anyone having any other source of information about Jesus other than revelations, private revelations of Jesus, and scripture, secret messages hidden in scripture. Now, there are some passages in Paul's letters that could be taken to infer a historical Jesus, but they're very vague. And to give you an example, he has this passage in 1 Corinthians 15 where he says, according to scriptures, Jesus was crucified and was buried and then rose from the dead and then was seen. And it was seen by various people, and he talks about this this, but he doesn't mention Jesus being seen before any of this. Jesus is only seen afterwards in this sequence of events. Mm. And so you might wonder, well, he's saying he's crucified and buried, right?
That was where I was going. Yep.
Yeah. But the fact is, there are lots of deities and other beings that have undergone events like that in outer space, and we actually have a Christian document. That's not an early Christian document. It dates, the text itself might date to the 2nd century. There's debates as to how early it goes, and it's been redacted multiple times. And it's called The Ascension of Isaiah, and it's basically that someone wrote a book claiming to be the secret revelations written down by Isaiah. Obviously, it's a bogus text that someone made up. But they're representing it as a revelation of Isaiah. And Isaiah was presented with this information about Jesus.
Who's Isaiah?
And in the Isaiah, the prophet from the Old Testament.
Okay. Isaiah?
And Isaiah. Yeah.
Okay, sorry.
You'll
layman here.
You'll know him from... Yeah, that's a common way to pronounce it as well, Isaiah. Anyway, so in this story, this revelation, the angels tell Isaiah that this Jesus figure is going to descend from heaven, become incarnate, and then he's basically going to be executed by Satan and his demons in the atmosphere, in outer space, what we would call outer space, and then rise from the dead there. He wouldn't go all the way to Earth. Now that this was redacted, there's a little section that was thrown in that actually had him go to Earth, that throws in the whole Mark and Gospel and stuff like that. But we can tell that was a later addition, and you can see from earlier remarks that the story was going to have him just be killed by the demons in outer space. To give you another example, we have an early Jewish text, this is called The Life of Adam and Eve, or the Testament of Adam and Eve. And in it, the body of Adam is buried in the third heaven, so basically up in outer space. That's where the Garden of Eden now resides, actually. And Paul actually mentions in his letters either him or someone visiting this Garden of Eden in the third heaven. So we know this is a belief shared by the Jews of Paul's group and the Christians of Paul's group. So there was a belief that Adam's body was buried up there. So you could be buried in outer space. So just the mere fact of mentioning a crucifixion and burial doesn't necessarily entail existence on Earth. So that leaves us the question, well, what is he talking about then when he talks about Jesus being crucified and buried? And he doesn't mention anyone seeing this or knowing about it except through revelations of Scripture. What does he mean? Does he mean something in outer space, or is he referring to something on Earth? And that's sort of the challenge. But the weird thing is that you would think if there was a recent charismatic ministry of Jesus, that he was so powerful and influential in his preaching, that he started this movement that would last for decades and grow, that debates and so forth would exist around the nature of what happened to him, what he did, what he actually said. You have issues of eyewitnesses, like if Jesus is said to have said one thing and then someone says he said another, you'd be arguments over who was there to hear it and so on. But we see none of this in the letters. There's no debates are resolved by saying, well, so-and-so was there, and Jesus said this at this occasion. He never mentions, for example, well, I know Jesus said this because Peter was there and he said, and so on. So this kind of thing that we could expect, this kind of discourse about questions about Jesus.
Richard Carrier, I've got a question on that, because I know that Paul was supposed to have met some of the disciples, including Peter, and there was a bit of a kerfuffle that went on there, mm-hmm. and I want you to hold on to this until the next segment. Is that, well, Paul met Peter, and Peter met Jesus, so, I mean, who knew what at what times? I'm very interested in this. Free Talk Live, 855-450-FREE.
The summer specials are on at HHA, Herbal Healer Academy. Current customers know this is the time to save big at herbalhealer.com. And you customers, welcome to the web's best place to save on vitamins, minerals, and more. Right now, Herbal Healer's summer specials include our 500 parts per million colloidal silver, all sizes on sale. Liquid CalMag vitamin D and organic iodine. CoQ10 with Hawthorne. Colon Enhancer. Super 2. Natural Laxative. Our exceptional product Tonixin. Memory Power and Super Male and Femplex. All on sale for summer at herbalhealer.com. Also get 10% off on the Herbal Healer Academy Survival Course. Information that might save your life. Enjoy same-day shipping and free online newsletter. Log on to our nation's leader in supplying quality natural medicine and education since 1988. Herbal Healer Academy at herbalhealer.com.
That's the sound of your door being kicked in by an intruder with a single kick. That's the sound of the same door now protected by the Door Sentinel at MySafeDoor.com. Go to MySafeDoor.com right now and watch the amazing video. At MySafeDoor.com, you'll learn how to turn your home into a fortress with the Door Sentinel. 16 kicks later,
and the door sentinel is still holding strong. MySafeDoor.com. That's MySafeDoor.com.
Hi, this is Ted Anderson. Have you ever wondered why banks, stockbrokers, investment advisors won't talk about gold IRAs? They've been available since 1986, yet the financial industry won't recognize the value of gold for your retirement. Gold has outperformed paper investments, yet no word about IRAs. If you would like to have gold for your retirement, call 800-686-2237. Don't get left behind by rising inflation and low returns. Call 800-686-2237. Secure your future and call 1-800-686-2237.
Would it save you time to get the best quality water filters and the best quality storable foods from one company? You bet it would, and now you can at BigBerkeyWaterFilters.com. Big Berkey Water Filter products and great-tasting, long-lasting, storable, wise foods are both now available on one website, BigBerkeyWaterFilters.com. Wise foods, ready-to-eat meals are packed in airtight nitrogen pouches and come with a 25-year shelf life. Big Berkey Water Filters are powerful enough to purify treated, untreated, or even stagnant pond water. Combine Berkey Water Filters with Wise Foods for an unbeatable preparedness combination. Get free shipping on every order over $50. And GCN listeners receive 5% off all ceramic filter systems. Visit Big, B-E-R-K-E-Y, waterfilters.com. Or call 877-99-BERKEY. That's 877-99-B-E-R-K-E-Y. Or go to BigBerkeyWaterFilters.com.
Did you know that 50% of heart attacks are brought on by infections? Did you know that hospitals are breeding grounds for antibiotic-resistant bugs like MRSA? The environment is infected with parasites, and the mild winter means ticks with Lyme disease, mosquitoes with West Nile virus, and cold and flu viruses will be on the rise. Protect yourself with Nature's Natural Antiparasitic, Antiviral, Antifungal, Antibiotic, Allicin, the Heart of Garlic. Get concentrated protection with Alli-C and Alli-Van from AffinityHealthProducts.com. One capsule of Alli-C equals 40 cloves of garlic or 100 garlic pills. With no garlic breath, Alli-Van has Allicin in spray, liquid, and cream forms with three times more strength than leading brands and costs less. Go to AffinityHealthProducts.com, spelled A-F-F-I-N-I-T-Y, HealthProducts.com, or call 877-888-7126. That's 877-888-7126. Protect yourself with Alli-C or Alli-Van from AffinityHealthProducts.com.
This is Free Talk Live. Call in now, 1-855-450-FREE. That's 1-855-450-FREE.
Free Talk Live, 855-453. The SACL toll-free call-in line, 855-450-3733. It's Mark with you.
And Stephanie.
You can call in and talk to us about, well, at this point, what Richard Carrier is talking to us about, which is, did Jesus exist? And I think it's very interesting because we live in a world, in a culture, in a society where Jesus is ubiquitous. The church is on every corner, and the idea that Jesus may never have existed at all from a historical standpoint is very interesting to me. So that's why I've got Richard on the phone here and talking to him about it. Richard, are you there?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Great. So we were talking about Paul and the compelling reasons why that Jesus may not have existed. But I found one that was very interesting. Is there's a claim that Nazareth didn't even exist when Jesus was around. Is this one of these crackpot claims that circles out there? Because there were Nazareans. Wasn't Samson one of those?
That's a different thing. Nazarites. Now, there is a theory that that's where the original epithet came from for Jesus, that Jesus was a Nazarite as well. And there are mainstream scholars who propose that. But a Nazarite is someone who takes a particular kind of vow, to, for example, not cut their hair or not drink wine for a certain amount of period, and that makes you a Nazarite. And it was a form of becoming ritually pure. And so there's a theory that that's a possibility. But usually when people are talking about Nazareth, Jesus as a Nazarene, the assumption is that he came from Nazareth. And so that's like what the Gospels claim. And so the argument that you're talking about is that some claim that there was no Nazareth then, so he couldn't have come from there. Now, there's two problems with this argument. The first is, even if it was true, it's not an argument that Jesus didn't exist, because it's possible people didn't know where the actual historical Jesus came from, and you could make up where he came from. So, like, for example, Bethlehem. That was clearly, most mainstream scholars agree Jesus was probably not really born in Bethlehem, and so that was a fabricated story, a mythological, legendary development. And Nazareth.
Now, why do they claim that? Why do they claim that Jesus wasn't born in Bethlehem? I mean, you know, there was the counting and all this stuff.
Right. There's a lot of reasons. The main one is that he was called a Nazarene, so the assumption is he's from Nazareth. And the gospel stories, the nativity stories that have him come from both Nazareth and Bethlehem, are in many ways massively implausible. They seem to be stretching the story to try and make this implausible double origin story make sense, and do so to make it fit prophecy. So a lot of scholars think that this is just a myth that was developed, because there's a lot of miracles involved and so on. So it's a myth that was developed to sort of explain how Jesus could fulfill prophecy when the Messiah was supposed to come from Bethlehem, when in fact Jesus was believed to be a Nazarene and so on. And so that's what a lot of mainstream scholars agree is probably the case. And so Nazareth could have been made up too. So the fact that even if Nazareth didn't exist, that to me is not a strong argument that Jesus didn't exist. It's just an argument that that's part of his story was made up.
Okay.
And it's possible that Nazarene for some other reason.
When you're talking to normal people, I mean, this would be a huge blow to the Jesus story. I mean,
that's true, yeah.
Because once a piece of the Jesus story isn't true, then the Jesus story isn't true.
Then they're really in trouble, because mainstream scholars do not have their back on that one.
Yeah, and this is a very interesting, is that the vast majority of Christians and preachers, people that they pay lots of money to go to school to be taught about Christianity, don't know what what scholars have agreed on at this point about these the scriptures and that kind of thing.
And are most of these scholars atheists, or are they religious themselves? I mean, it would seem to me like if you know most of this stuff, the more you know, the more you realize this is all made up, you know? This is just taught to me.
Well, what's the answer to that question?
Both, actually. There's a lot of course, they're usually liberal Christians on the liberal spectrum of theological thoughts.
What's that mean? What's that mean? They like gay folks? What's liberal mean?
Well, maybe, but no, typically they're not fundamentalists. They're not, obviously not biblical inerrantists. They're not biblical literalists, and so on. And so they're comfortable with the possibility that Jesus was just an ordinary man, but there was something spiritually important happening through him to the agency of God and so on. But there are a lot of Christians. So among the mainstream scholarly community, I'd say that there's a lot of Christians and a good proportion of atheists, but not, I wouldn't even say a majority probably, but I don't really know either. No polls have been done to really tell.
So Richard, does somebody have to be very, very damaged emotionally from to get into the study of religion as an atheist? I mean, you know, because I got to say that I'm thoroughly damaged by my time in church, Sunday school and church, and I went to regular Christian school, and all these stories about you got to do what we say, and morality is as we say it is, or you're going to go burn for eternity. And I mean, these are scary, scary stories that once you say, you know, I'm just going to leave this behind, I think that you're bitter in a lot of ways.
I do know a lot of people like that. I missed all of that, so I don't have that background. I didn't have any negative experiences with Christianity or religion in general, until I was an atheist, actually.
Raised with some religion. What was that?
Yeah, I tell that story, and of course, people are interested in my philosophy of life as well. That side of me that we were talking about earlier is in my book, Sense and Goodness Without God. So if you're interested in that would be the way to go. And I tell my whole background story in the first few chapters of that. But basically, I was raised in a very liberal Methodist community. There was no hellfire. There was no that kind of stuff. It was a very nice community. Bible stories were told as sort of fables. Like, the moral of the story was the important thing. It didn't matter if it was true or not, that kind of thing. So that was my original exposure to Christianity. It was actually a shock to me as I grew up and went through high school and so forth. I started encountering fundamentalists who I thought were like that was silly and weird. And then, of course, when I became an adult and was a full-on atheist, I started to run into how they were affecting the political realities and actually hurting people's lives and things like that. So that was my rude awakening. It was a completely different path for me.
Interesting.
But of course, when I got interested in studying religion, it was partly from the philosophical side. In order to establish what the truth is, I had to examine religions and say, well, can I actually rule these out? And then the other was I was interested in ancient history, just Greco-Roman history in general. And because I was in the atheist movement, that made me a go-to person to ask questions about this or that Christian apologist. You know, so-and-so said this. Is that true? Can you read this document in the original Greek? Can you tell me what it really says? You know, that kind of, I got lots of questions like that. And that got me fascinated further and further. Like, the more I would examine and look into these questions for people, I found things that were just, to me, fascinating and interesting in and of themselves. And then as a historian and an educator, I'm very big on dispelling lies and mistruths and miseducation and getting the truth out there, you know, getting people the ability to have easy access to what really happened, what do we really know, what do these documents really say, and so on. So when I see Christian apologists and others distorting the truth of what really was going on in the ancient world and so on, that annoys me, and I see it's sort of my mission to benefit people by trying to dispel that by showing them, well, that's not really what was going on, and here's why, and then I present the evidence and so on. So to me, that's how I got into studying religion and how I got to where I am today on this subject.
Now, pedanticism essentially is the reason. You just don't like people saying things aren't true. So, what I want to do here is I want to, for the average person listening, and, you know, probably the average person, because, you know, whether you're a theist or not a theist, the chances are you believe that Jesus existed. What, what would you say to them as the most compelling reason that, Jesus might not have actually walked the earth?
I'm sorry, say to whom? What group of people?
Just sort of the average individual out there. I mean, is there the sort of a nugget that you can distill? Because when it comes to Paul, and deciding that some of his books are true and some are not true, and the ones that are true are still written in sort of a strange way, so Paul may have been high on mushrooms or whatever the story is. And it's hard to say, right? You know, some guy 2,000 years ago wrote some stuff down, and now we've got to believe that stuff.
Right. Yeah, there isn't, because even if I were to give you like one nugget, for example, I could point out that there was this Jewish scholar who was a contemporary of Paul by the name of Philo. And Philo was writing books about Jewish theology, and he mentions there was this belief in a Jesus figure who was a cosmic being who was called the firstborn son of God. He lived in heaven. He was one of the first things God created, and he was the agent of creation, this Jesus figure.
Hold on. Hold on to him for just one second here. We'll be right back with Richard Carrier, 855-450-3733, Free Talk Live.
If you've listened to Free Talk Live for any length of time, you're familiar with Bradley Dardis.
Brad is the former police officer that now embraces the ideas of liberty, and now he's running for sheriff of Coos County in New Hampshire. Sheriff is a very important position from which a liberty-oriented individual can protect many rights of the populace. Any U.S. citizen can donate to his campaign up to $1,000.
He's hoping to raise as much money as possible for his campaign, and his chances are quite good. He's running in Coos County, and Ron Paul actually carried Coos.
I hope you'll trust me when I say that we know a few other good reasons that we believe Brad can win.
Come on, join Ian and me in donating to Brad's campaign and getting a liberty-loving individual in this very important seat.
If Brad gets this seat, it'll be the biggest win for the liberty movement in New Hampshire and maybe anywhere. Give what you can at bradforsheriff.com. bradforsheriff.com.
This was paid for by friends of Bradley Jardis. Bradley Jardis, fiscal agent.
Healthy soils grow healthy plants. So before you plant your survival garden this year, is your soil healthy? Maximize your crisis garden soil with EM1 from Terraganics. EM1 Organic Soil Conditioner, Fertilizer Amendment, and Compost Accelerant provides healthier gardens and faster, efficient garden composting. EM1 from Terraganics.com quickly improves soil structure by increasing nutrient availability and converting organic matter into soil humus. This improves seed germination and root growth, improves plant quality, size, color, flavor, nutrient value of fruits and vegetables, and improves shelf life. And when rain is not in the forecast, no worries. EM1 improves moisture retention in soils, helping reduce drought stress. Just like you prepare all else, prepare your crisis garden for maximum yields with EM1 from Terraganics.com. Order now at TerraGanics.com or call toll-free 866-369-3678. That's 866-369-3678. Terraganics. Life's getting better.
America, land of the free. But how free can you be, really, when internet viruses and malware can attack your computer? Sure, you have antivirus protection, but it's not free, is it? Until now. Now, Zone Alarm offers free antivirus protection. And independent studies show that Zone Alarm provides better malware protection than even Norton and McAfee. And they're not free, are they? Declare your freedom and go to GetBetterForFree.com. That's GetBetterForFree.com.
Hi, this is Ted Anderson. Have you ever wondered why banks, stockbrokers, investment advisors won't talk about gold IRAs? They've been available since 1986, yet the financial industry won't recognize the value of gold for your retirement. Gold has outperformed paper investments, yet no word about IRAs. If you would like to have gold for your retirement, call 800-686-2237. Don't get left behind by rising inflation and low returns. Call 800-686-2237. Secure your future and call 1-800-686-2237.
We've all heard the phrase, don't judge a book by its cover. A wise saying for sure. Now apply that wisdom to nutrition. Don't judge milk by the animal. Camel milk, the best kept health secret ever. See for yourself at CamelMilkForSale.com and look for the Summer Camel Milk Special. Loaded with health benefits far superior to other milk, camel milk has antibacterial, antiviral, and anti-tumor properties, is rich in B vitamins, and is 3 times higher in vitamin C than cow's milk, 10 times higher in iron. Plus, it contains 52 units of insulin-like proteins per liter, effectively lowering blood sugar levels. Many of our members testified that drinking camel milk reversed diabetes and greatly improved autism. Camel milk comes fresh or frozen from your trusted local family farm, shipped on dry ice to preserve freshness. Go to CamelMilkForSale.com now and look under products and pricing for the summer special with free bonus pints. That's CamelMilkForSale.com.
You're listening to Free Talk Live. Call 1-855-450-FREE. That's 1-855-450-FREE.
Free Talk Live, 855-450-FREE. That's the SACL toll-free call-in line, 855-450-3733. You can call in with your questions for Richard Carrier. We have him on the line here, and we're talking about whether or not Jesus existed. But first, real quick, uncovering the secrets and exposing the lies. That's what the readers of FreedomsPhoenix.com get every day. Readers of FreedomsPhoenix.com are constantly provided the detailed real news that lies between the lines of propaganda and the relationship that we all have with coercive governments. FreedomsPhoenix.com offers up-to-the-minute updates on the economy, technology, communications, and the rise of the police state. Go now to FreedomsPhoenix.com. Sign up for their free daily dispatch. I'm on it. So let's go back to Richard Carrier. Hey, by the way, it's Mark with you.
And Stephanie.
Now, Richard, you were talking about Philo, who's a contemporary of Paul.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Just quickly and briefly, that Philo gives us evidence that there was already a Jewish belief. This would have been before there was a historical Jesus. This belief must have existed, that there was already a firstborn son of God named Jesus who lived in heaven and who was the agent of creation and so on. Now, if you hear that, you realize, well, wait a minute, that's kind of a weird coincidence that there was this cosmic Jesus, firstborn son of God, and then now we're looking at like historical stories of this firstborn son of God named Jesus and so on. So I could bring that out as one of the evidences that we have that maybe the Gospels are kind of these sort of euhemerizing myths. Now, a euhemerizing myth is a myth where you take a cosmic God and put him on Earth and make a historical story about him. And we have lots of examples like Osiris, for example, is one of these gods.
Right.
Zeus, you mentioned earlier, they even euhemerized Zeus, and that's where the word euhemerize comes from. It comes from the writer Euhemerus, who wrote the stories. He wrote this thing called the Sacred Scripture, which just said, well, you know, Zeus and Uranus were actual kings on Earth, and then they ascended to heaven and so on. So they were actually put on Earth and given biographies and so on, even Zeus, right? So if you heard that there was this cosmic Jesus that predated Christianity, you might think, well, maybe there's a case to be made that the Gospels are also doing the same thing, that they're euhemerizing Jesus, putting him on Earth. Now, I could tell you that, but then, of course, you could say, oh, that's amazing, and then you go talk to another scholar who defends historicity, and they'll bring up a lot of variety of arguments and say, well, these are the reasons why that wouldn't be a conclusive argument, or, you know, they can argue against it. And so that wouldn't be a convincing thing, because then you have to have the whole complete debate. You have to present all the evidence and say, where did Philo say these things, and so on. And that's just one piece of evidence. So each particular item has the same thing. If I were to say, like, for example, Paul's letters lack mention of a historical Jesus, and you were mentioning some examples where we could kind of debate that, depending on what we take the passages in it to mean. So it becomes a complicated debate, and so it needs a more thorough treatment. I don't think there's something you can just talk to someone on the street and convince them, and nor should they be convinced by any single point that you might make.
I think lay people tend to be convinced by more simple arguments, and one for me early on was that, you know, there is no Jesus. There's a guy named Yeheshua was the claim, and so, you know, here you have a document that's a translation of a translation that is the unerring word of God with every dot and tittle is correct, that has the protagonist's name wrong. You know, for me, I found this to be very important. Now, that may not be convincing to anybody else,
right,
but let's not
right.
forget that if I choose not to believe this, that if I don't believe it, that a fair and just God will send me to eternal damnation, which is the worst kind of torture, a child that he loves, simply because he couldn't get the protagonist right in his story. For me, that's the kind of thing that I find very difficult. Let's go real quick here to take Justin on the line here. Justin, you're on with Richard Carrier.
Hi, I just wanted to comment about the subject. I'm a devout Catholic, and I totally disagree with their argument.
No, you're talking right to Richard.
Right, I totally disagree with your approach and your whole attitude about Christ.
So why do you disagree, Justin?
Well, it seems like he's on some kind of crusade to debunk someone's personal faith. And I don't think that's cool, you know?
So you feel upset?
I mean, the whole idea about free will is to say I can choose to believe in God or I choose not to. But I don't think it's our place to tell someone they can't believe in God. Like,
Nobody's saying that, Justin.
No, I don't think they are.
I think that what's important, an important attribute to free will, and I've heard this before, an important attribute is truth. You can't make a decision without knowing the truth, and we need to parse what the truth is. Wouldn't you agree?
Amen.
Truth is one's perception, first of all. How do we perceive the truth?
All the answers are in the Bible, Mark.
But also, for me, it's a matter of faith.
I don't know what to say about faith, but I do find it difficult to, and I would let Richard defend this, but Richard really is a historian.
Right.
And, you know, he wants to defend it. I do appreciate the call, Justin, by the way.
I was just about to bring up the faith question because I'm skeptical that people in general would be convinced, no matter how good of evidence and reason Richard lays out. You know, they'll always just say, well, I have my faith. And some things you can't really analyze that deeply, I believe.
But Richard, I mean, it's obvious you just hate Christians.
No, there are many Christians that I get along with fine. But I do have a problem with certain fundamentalist Christians, right-wing Christians, and so forth. I do think religion can be a corrupting influence on society. I do think it causes a lot of problems. But to me, the most important thing is to just make sure we have the right worldview. I mean, you could say the same thing if Christians are arguing against Islam being the one true religion, which they're doing. It could be okay for Muslims to argue the same for Christians, and so you have to have that debate and figure out, well, okay, so which one of them is right, right?
Right. Anybody who has a religion is an atheist for all the other religions, right?
That's right. And there's more than just two. It's not just Muslims versus Christians.
Every religion is saying that about every other religion, yeah.
That's right. And then I'm in that market as well. I've got my own. I think I've figured out what the most likely worldview is compared to all the others. And so I'm making my case. And the ideal of a free country is that you can believe whatever you want, right? You're free to believe what you want. But you should have respect for evidence. You should base your beliefs on reason, on what's the most rational conclusion to draw from the evidence that actually exists. So what the truth is very important. And to me, it's very important. And so that's, most of my life is devoted to trying to get the truth out there, trying to debate the truth, trying to discover the truth, discuss what it's with various faith traditions and so forth.
Right. I mean, this is your life's work, your PhD in this. Now, before we go, I really want to answer this particular question. Paul met Peter, right?
Yeah. You mentioned that before, right? In Galatians, this is mentioned in Galatians 1. There's a lot of interesting things in there, but one of the thing you're referring to is he mentions that he did meet Peter, who is the first apostle, according to Paul in another passage. But Paul never calls him a disciple. Paul never mentions disciples. There's no concept of a disciple in Paul. There are only apostles. And apostles, in Paul's definition, are people who've had revelations of Jesus. And in Galatians 1, he even talks about how he was made an apostle that way.
Yeah.
And so when he talks about meeting Peter, what we don't know is, does he mean Peter who actually met and knew Jesus, or does he mean an apostle who had a revelation of Jesus the same way Paul did? What's more challenging and interesting in that passage is not the reference to Peter, which could be explained either way, but in that same passage, in the same thing, he says, well, then I also met James, the brother of the Lord.
Mm-hmm.
And so then the question is, well, okay, so if there's a brother, then he must have actually existed. The problem with that is it doesn't say James, the brother of Jesus. It says James, the brother of the Lord. And in Christian theology, as even Paul says in his time, that Jesus was adopted by God and became the Son of God. He was the firstborn among many brethren. That's Romans 8, verse 29. And there's many other references in Paul to when you become baptized, you are being adopted as the Son of God, and therefore we're all brothers. That's for the Christian concept of the
We're not
the
born
brothers.
As sons of God? Go ahead.
No.
Go ahead. Go ahead. Continue with your line of thought. I'm sorry.
This is Paul's theology. What current Christian sects believe is a whole other matter, but this is what Paul argues. And in Paul's argument, when you become baptized, you become adopted as the Son of God. And that's how all Christians are brothers, and that's why they call each other brothers. But I mean, that means all Christians are brothers of the Lord, right? Because Jesus is also the Son of God. We're all sons of the God. And, you know, Paul says Jesus is the firstborn among many brethren. So we're all brothers of the Lord. So brother of the Lord would have been an early name for Christian. Or it could have been a special title, like you could gain a particular rank that would earn you that title and so on. There's a lot of mystery religions that had similar kinds of ranks. So the question is, that when he says James, the brother of the Lord, does he mean the biological brother of the Lord, or does he mean the adopted brother of the Lord? And that's the challenge. And you can't answer that question from just that passage alone. You have to go out and look at all the remaining evidence and say, what is the best explanation of all the evidence there is? And that's a long, complicated process, and that's my next book, which will come out next year, on the historicity of Jesus Christ. We'll examine all of that evidence.
I want to talk about, if it's possible, Richard, I don't want to take up your evening. I told you an hour, but I have more questions. So if I can hold you through the top of the hour here, that would be really great. I've got a couple more questions, and I want to talk about the books that are coming out. It's Richard Carrier. He is the author of several books here, a couple books on whether or not Jesus existed, and I think it's very interesting. Believe it or not, I mean, you know, Jesus could have existed, could have not, but I think that, you know, he's making an interesting a case. 855-450-3733.
Call us if you think this is heresy.
Well, I suppose. You know, any question you have, 855-450-FREE.
In every age, a technology is created that upends the foundations of society. The wheel, the printing press, the internet. Now, in a world sliding into financial chaos, a new technology is changing the way monetary systems work around the world. It is called Bitcoin. Bitcoin is a new form of money controlled not by banks, governments, or corporations, but through mutual commerce between free individuals. To learn more, visit weusecoins.com.
Online Bitcoin poker at dealswithclubs.eu. That's right. Play poker online with Bitcoin, the digital cryptocurrency. Anonymous accounts, optional email, and no banking. Only Bitcoin deposits and withdrawals at dealswithclubs.eu. Great player rewards, free rolls, and other promotions. For more information, visit us online at dealswithclubs.eu. No seals are hard in the making of this advertisement.
How's your pH today? Are you acidic? How alkaline is your blood and body? What is the pH of the water you drink? We are AlkaVision, and we have the answers. Drinking pure, high-alkaline water is one of the most important factors in maintaining vibrant health and high energy, because bacteria and viruses cannot survive in an alkaline, high pH environment. If your drinking water isn't at a pH level of 8 or higher, boost it with AlkaVision Plasma pH Drops. Our unique formula will alkalize your water, ridding your body of harmful toxins and acid, and help regain energy and health. Simply add 10 drops of AlkaVision Plasma pH Drops to help your body rid itself of acidic waste, increase oxygen, and raise the pH of your body to optimal levels. Order your bottle of AlkaVision Plasma pH Drops for only $29.95 at AlkaVision.com, spelled AlkaVision.com, or call 800-518-7615, 800-518-7615. Alkalize your body, supercharge your health at AlkaVision.com.